This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders, and welcome to this edition of the U.S. Lens. As you may well have heard by now, the U.N. Climate Conference is underway in Glasgow, Scotland, also known as COP26, which stands for Conference of Parties. The parties there trying to agree on a framework that could reduce the impact of what we've seen, some dramatic changes in climate activity that have brought us wildfires, droughts, floods, and a wide variety of disruptions over the last year, in which we've also suffered through a pandemic. Now, this also has investment implications for one's portfolio. And joining us now to both talk about the broad strokes around COP26 and also how this affects portfolios, Sarah Bratton-Hughes, who is with us today from Schroders, and also Leslie Ann Morgan, who is head of multi-asset management. I thank you both for being with us. And Sarah, I'm going to start with you. This is the 26th annual climate change conference that the United Nations has put together. We've heard for many, many years now about the risk of running 1.5 degrees Celsius hotter than we should. And some are worried that we're already there and that we're seeing the adverse consequences of climate change occur in real time. Can you set the stage for us as we continue to move through this conference that's going on in Scotland?
Thanks, Ron. I think this can really be summed up in a quote by John Kerry, the U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, as he declared COP26 the starting line for the rest of the decade. We've seen some ambitious commitments here by world leaders in the first week, whether it was the promise to end deforestation by 2030, with more than 100 world leaders promising to end and reverse deforestation, or the dozens of nations pledging to slash methanes at COP26. Both U.S. and European unions have made this commitment, and it was one of the headlines of President Biden's speeches. Also massively impactful is the Indian PM's pledge to be net zero by 2070. We've also seen on the asset management side, the ranks of net zero asset managers swell to over $57 trillion in assets under management. There has been some headlines, although COP26 related, not exactly at the conference, on investors threatening against auditors over climate risk, so auditors that are not assessing this when they're assessing the books of companies' financial statements. And on the positive side, we've seen the IFRS Foundation, International Financial Reporting Standards Foundation, announce their intention to consolidate with the Value Reporting Foundation, formerly the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board, to form the first ever International Sustainability Standards Board, ISSB. Yes, that is another sustainability acronym you need to learn. However, this is groundbreaking for corporate disclosure, an area that investors and corporates alike have really struggled with when it comes to quantifying sustainability risks and opportunities. But if I could sum it all up, this is no different than many other COPs where we've seen through the first week a lot of ambition. But what we really need to see coming out of COP26 is action. So I'm looking forward to the headlines from next week, but I'm even more looking forward to the action we will see in the weeks, months, and years to come.
All right. So with that, Leslie Ann, Sarah mentioned net zero, which we hear a lot about. We've heard some companies make pledges that they will be net zero. We talk about the requirements among governments to reach that goal, whatever that is. Would you explain it? What does it actually mean? And how do countries and companies get there?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ron. I'm actually going to go back a little bit. I'm going to do a little bit of climate change 101, just to remind everyone about this 1.5 degrees C and how that links into net zero. So way back now in 2015, the Paris Agreement established this long-term temperature goal of holding the increase in the global average temperature to well below 2 degrees above pre-industrial levels and pursuing efforts to limit the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial levels. And basically, every avoided increment of warming reduces extremes such as heat waves and heavy rainfall and droughts and blah, blah, blah. We've heard it all, right? But what actually warms the planet? Well, the gases that trap the heat in the atmosphere are obviously the greenhouse gases. And Sarah talked there about the methane pledges at COP26. But the vast majority of greenhouse gases comes from burning fossil fuels. And therefore, most focus is on carbon emissions. And that's where companies and governments have got a role to play here. And net zero is when a business or a country achieves an overall balance between the amount of carbon it's emitting and the carbon that it's removing from the atmosphere. And it's generally believed that limiting warming to 1.5 degrees C will require countries and companies to reach net zero by 2050. So that's the link between net zero and 1.5 degrees. And they will have a path of how they will get there. How does an investment manager get involved with that? Well, it's our job to check adherence to the plan and engage with the company management and hold their feet to the fire, right? So they'll have this plan. We've got to get them to stick to it and check that they're sticking to it.
In order to do that, you have to be able to measure. So how does one measure decarbonization and then manage the process from there?
Yeah, so the key measures that asset owners and asset managers need to calculate are basically carbon emissions, that's usually in tons of the assets, and implied temperature rise of the assets from the carbon that's emitted. And targets are normally set for each. So you normally have something like reach net zero carbon emissions by date X, reach 1.5 degrees C by date Y. And also, you often have interim targets as well, and you need those interim targets to be able to hold the companies against. But then each asset owner will need to decide which assets to include in the calculation. Some believe it's all assets. We've actually signed up to the Net Zero Asset Manager Initiative, which supports measuring all assets. But some others only really measure public equity, public corporate debt, real estate. But the problem is today that some assets can be measured with more confidence than others. And the data actually doesn't exist for a bunch of asset classes. So we have to work on what we can get now in terms of the data. And I believe that we need to have an ambition to be able to measure all the assets as soon as possible. So that's which assets. And then the second issue on measurement is what should we measure? So we could just include scope 1 and scope 2 emissions, or we could include scope 1, 2 and 3. So scope 1, just to remind everyone, covers direct emissions that can be controlled by the company. Scope 2 covers indirect emissions from the generation of, say, purchased electricity. And scope 3 covers all the other indirect emissions that occur in a company's value chain. And if you take a glance at our paper, Ron, what you'll see is that scope 3 emissions are typically both larger than scope 1 and scope 2 emissions, and are also key to understanding whether a company's business model is compatible with actually targeting those goals of the Paris Agreement. So scope 3 is pretty important.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
And we've come quite a number of years from the Paris Agreement have made, in some instances, some progress, but there are very few companies that have outlined a clear path to net zero. Some have claimed they're already there, but most really haven't, and most haven't articulated a path. So how do you think about balancing diversification on the one hand and decarbonization goals at the same time?
Yeah, so in setting a decarbonization strategy, there's actually a trade-off between physical and transition risks of climate change and the diversification of the portfolio. Again, loads of jargon here in relation to this. Let me just remind everyone, physical risks are the ones that arise from changes in the weather and climate that impact the economy. Transition risks arise from the transition to a low carbon economy. And what you can do is, if you imagine a straight line from for your portfolio, from the net emissions today, say that's, you know, about 3 degrees C, I don't know, but let's say, for example, and imagine getting from that temperature to net zero in 2050. If you choose to have a steeper decarbonisation line than that, so you're trying to get to net zero quicker, you're likely to incur higher transition costs to protect against physical costs. But the issue here is that not very many companies actually have a credible net zero target today, which is what you were highlighting there, Ron. And so if you have a very aggressively steep decarbonisation curve today, that's going to reduce your investment universe drastically, and that's going to reduce diversification. But on the flip side, if you decarbonize too slowly, so kind of behind that linear line that I talked about, that could result in higher physical costs from climate change as emissions stay elevated. But also, your portfolio is still going to incur transition costs at some point in the future, because we've still got to get to a low carbon economy. So it's a difficult balancing decision to make. And the speed that you go at with your investment is obviously up to you as investors, but is also subject to a number of uncertain factors. So, for example, in some countries, regulation will have a bigger impact, may force you to have a faster decarbonisation line. But there might also be things that you want to take into account, such as technological advances that get certain sectors there faster. And I think we need to recognise there'll be some companies and industries that are easier to get there, and there'll be some that will find very difficult to get to net zero.
So that introduces another D word, which is divestment. So for those companies that can't get there or have a very slow timeline in getting there, what happens from an investor's perspective when it comes to not just diversifying, but also maybe being forced to divest assets because they're not meeting their goals? And yet there's still a fiduciary duty among investment managers to deliver absolute returns or better than benchmark returns in the portfolio.
Yeah, so in our analysis, if you lay out all of the companies in relation to their carbon emissions along a line with the lower carbon emissions on the left and the higher ones on the right, you'll see there's a handful of global stocks that are worst emitters of over 10 degrees C on the right-hand side of that line. If you are permitted to cut those out of your portfolio, it reduces the equity universe by about 2%, not too much, but it will have a significant improvement in your chance of being able to get to net zero in your portfolio. But we would argue that it is better to engage with the companies than divest from them. We believe that the majority of companies, even those with negative sustainability characteristics today, right, are not lost causes. And divestment doesn't actually result in decarbonisation, because someone else can always choose to invest in them. But there may be, I guess there may be some companies that will never get there, or there may be some industries that will never get there. And asset owners and investors who have got kind of faster net zero goals are more likely to choose to cut off capital to those types of companies in their portfolios, and probably will hope that others will follow suit. But if they're not permitted to divest, I guess the only other way to deal with that would be to use carbon offsets to meet their net zero goals.
So, Sarah, let me come to you on this then. We may or may not hear a wide variety of participants talk about net zero commitments and also something called SBTI submissions. Can you tell us, one, what to expect in that regard, and more importantly, what these are, and should we expect to see a flurry of commitments sometime in a relatively near future?
Thanks, Ron. I'm just going to start just level setting on SBTI. SBTI stands for the Science-Based Target Initiative, And it's an initiative to reduce, to work with businesses and financial institutions to reduce their emissions in line with climate science. So just taking, thinking about your question and tying it back to my original comments, yes, we should expect to see a flurry of asset manager commitments, probably smaller to start, but increasing given the pledges we have seen this week. And why is this so important? Well, if you look at the asset management industry on a scope one or scope two basis compared to other industries, when you're talking about how much carbon we emit, we are way down off the chart. However, when you add in scope three, which includes our financial activities, our finance activities, we're in the top three emitters globally. So it is really important that if we're going to decarbonize, that the asset management industry has a significant role to play in that. So we have seen the ranks of the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative swell to over $57 trillion in assets. And recently, the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative released its progress report that details the interim targets of 43 asset managers, revealing that 35% of their total assets under management are now being managed in line with achieving net zero by 2050. I would expect that number to grow in terms of asset managers revealing their target, as well as how many assets are going to be managed in line with net zero by 2050.
All right. Now, if you could, Sarah, just to put a button on everything, as we move through the remainder of the week, what should we expect to hear? And before we engage in a roundup a week or so or 2 weeks from now, what are you keeping an eye on most closely as this climate change conference continues?
Yeah, so from the asset management perspective, we're continuing to keep an eye on all of these commitments and which one of these commitments we actually think will evolve to into policy, right? Just because we have a bunch of world leaders making commitments, it doesn't necessarily always result in the policy that is needed to back those commitments and to execute on those commitments. So we'll be continuing to look at that from that perspective. I think we're also going to have a very close eye on how the conversation around natural capital, biodiversity, and deforestation continues to grow in the coming weeks. So looking forward to seeing all of the positives in the coming weeks. And again, looking for the follow through and the action that's going to come out on the back of this conference.
All right. I want to thank you both. Sarah Bratton Hughes, Head of Global Sustainability Solutions. Leslie Ann Morgan, Head of Multi-Asset Strategy at Schroders. Thank you both. We're going to be back in a week or so to talk about some of the developments that came out of the COP26 conference, the UN Global Climate Change Conference taking place in Glasgow. We look forward to having that conversation and having everyone back to hear it. For now, enjoy the day. Enjoy the weekend. Thanks for listening. I'm Ron Insana, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.